Welcome to the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society. Welcome to ITSP Magazine Podcast Radio. Join us on our journey into the past, the present, and the future as we explore the relationship between technology and humanity. Together, we are going to find out what it means to live in a society where everything is connected and the only constant is change. Knowledge is power, now more than ever. Imperva is the cybersecurity leader whose mission is to protect data and all paths to it with a suite of integrated application and data security solutions. Learn more at imperva.com. Nintex is the global standard for business process management and automation. The Nintex platform helps their clients accelerate progress on their digital transformation journeys by quickly and easily managing, automating, and optimizing business processes. Learn more at nintex.com. RSA Security offers business-driven security solutions that provide organizations with a unified approach to managing digital risk that hinges on integrated visibility, automated insights, and coordinated actions. Learn more at rsa.com.
Hello, everyone. This is Sean Martin, Editor-in-Chief for ITSP Magazine and co-host of many podcast channels on ITSP Radio. You're very welcome to join us today for a very special Data Privacy Day event hosted by our good friends at the National Cybersecurity Alliance. Quick moment to give a word of thanks for Kelvin Coleman and Jennifer Cook for once again inviting me to be part of this very important event. And it's actually my pleasure to have this next conversation with Rita Himes, General Counsel and Chief Privacy Officer for IAPP. That's the International Association of Privacy Professionals. And Rita and I are going to take a journey past, present, and future of what it means to create a culture of privacy within an organization. Rita, pleasure to have this chat with you today.
It's my pleasure. Thanks for having me, Sean.
And so folks have a sense of where you're coming from, where your mind is at, which is a big part of culture, which I'm sure we'll touch on today.
Sure.
A brief view into your journey leading you to this point. Why is privacy important to you?
Great. Well, I'll give the selfish reason, which some people can relate to, I think, if they're a privacy professional, and that is that it's a very interesting field of law, and it is changing so rapidly that you are never bored. You always have to learn something new. You always have to be on the top of your game. And for many of us who are privileged to work for multinationals or companies that do business globally, let me put it that way, it gives you an excuse to pay attention to how other cultures and other regions of the world think about privacy and data protection, something that you may not get to do if you are working in a more narrow field of law. So I love it intellectually and professionally, but that's the selfish piece. I think the emotional side is that it is so relevant to our daily lives as humans, as parents, as consumers. So you can both practice what you enjoy intellectually, but also relate to it from the perspective of the customers that your company may be serving. So that's my thoughtful journey. Practically speaking, I've been with the IAPP since November of 2015. And have just risen through the process to end up with the responsibility of being the privacy officer for the Privacy Association and also its general counsel. So lots of fun, never a dull day.
Never a dull moment. And yeah. I'm sure loads of activities to keep your mind going on this this very topic. So I would suspect you would agree with me, and if you don't, by all means tell me, but one or an organization can't just claim they have a culture with privacy at the core of its values. They actually have to believe in that, execute against that, do things that gets their employees to demonstrate it, and more importantly, do things that get their customers and their partners even to experience what that means. So whatever they want to do has to be demonstrable, I guess, is what I want to say. Mm. So with this in mind, what does it mean to create a culture of privacy?
In terms of the in-house experience, what does it take to get an enterprise to think that way? clearly the number one tactical move, in my opinion, is leadership. It has to start with the highest levels of the organization, that that's a value that the organization stands for. And then it has to be backed up with the kind of hiring that's done, the number, the people that are put in place. Even the questions that are asked at interviews should be peppered with questions about points of view and history, experience with data management, data handling practices. You know, what do you think we should do? Here's a scenario in which you come across data that has maybe not been deleted that we don't need anymore, or a form that you're going to ask your customers to complete where there's the want to have but don't need to have data. What if marketing asks you for this and you don't feel comfortable sharing it? Those are great questions for people throughout the organization who may have access to data or be handling data. So I think it starts with leadership, but it goes all the way through to the moment you're onboarding someone new. Those are tactical reasons, but maybe what you wanted to ask me was, why do you do it? What does it look like? What does it feel like? I think what it feels like to me is that whenever anyone in my organization spots a privacy issue, they call me. They write me an email, they set up a meeting, they think of me right away, and they include me in the solution. So it has an immediate effect. It's top of mind. So that's what it should feel like, I think, if you have a privacy sensitive and a culture in your organization. And I guess, can I just keep going? Because I was going to say, one of the reasons to bother with it is not just risk mitigation. That's the easy answer. Oh, we don't want to mishandle people's data and then end up getting sued for it if there's a breach. I mean, that's obvious. You don't even need to say that. Of course, you don't want that to happen. But I think of the importance of working for an organization that is thoughtful and careful and has a good soul. And people would rather work in that place than the one that isn't like that, right? The one that takes advantage, that is cutting corners. So if you want to have happy employees, you want to have a culture where people feel like they work for the good guy, you know? And those people are loyal to you and they stick with you for longer because they enjoy where they work and they believe in their work. Privacy is one of many components, along with diversity and inclusion and all those other values, that your employees will notice that you take it seriously and they'll respect you for it and they'll be proud of where they work. So that's another reason why it feels good and is appropriate to have a privacy culture internally if you can.
Yeah, I love that. We just had a conversation the other day about devices and companies embracing privacy as they build devices that go into the hands of consumers, and there's this creepy factor when privacy isn't taken to heart for some of those manufacturers. And what I want to do is kind of use that as a driver. You mentioned a couple items here where your employees feel better that they're part of something that matters and they're doing good for their customers. What are some other value points that are important for organizations to recognize that this isn't just to, as you said, reduce risk and avoid a fine or even worse, right? So what are some of the other benefits of having a culture of privacy that really takes to heart the information that companies are trying to use properly, but also protect?
Okay, so trust, your consumer trust is important. Demonstrating at the moment that you collect their data that you've already thought through all the way what's going to happen with it, from its first points of use to the secondary uses, which everyone must admit is important to companies these days. The reason you have data analytics is because you want to see how your consumers interact with you, what they like, and you want to be able to offer them more of what they like. I don't think that's evil. That's the way the world works. Most consumers, if they really think about it, also want you to do that. However, some consumers don't, and or there are ways to do that without being too invasive. So it's that thoughtfulness at the consumer's journey when they first join you and start to work with you that I think you can begin to express from the moment they enter your doors. You know, the other thing is if you've thought through the life cycle of the data, what you plan to do with it, how you're going to treat it, where it's going to be stored, who has access to it, you may find that at some point you just don't need it anymore. So either you don't collect it in the first place or you have a really rigorous standard for getting rid of it. I realize as soon as I say this, something will go wrong and I'll look like a hypocrite, because this is the hardest thing to really do, is delete data that you don't need anymore. But that part of the journey, don't collect it if you don't need it and get rid of it when you're done, reduces the risk. If you don't have people's personal data, then it can't be misused by you and presumably by bad guys. So a culture of privacy reduces risk all over and also increases consumer trust.
Absolutely. And this may be a tough question, but it's kind of the, we're talking about an organization that has employees that presumably they can set objectives for and do annual reviews for. It gets a little trickier when we start to talk about the supply chain and working with partners, and they're an extension of an organization. So how do you see companies working with other businesses and maintaining that culture of privacy with their business partners?
Yeah, Sean, I would love to give you a Pollyanna response, but I'm going to tell you that I think that's the hardest one of all. I see it as general counsel when I help sign agreements with our corporate customers, and they are always forcing us, which I don't mind doing, to sign their business ethics and codes of conduct, and these very lofty, you know, many of which are like legally obliged. You promise not to engage in bribery or to be corrupt and whatnot. Sure, yes, we promise not to do those things. I can assure you we're not doing those things. But they often take it an extra step and they ask that you have sustainability policies and other things. So what I see in the supply chain is these very significant documents, codes of conduct, rules of ethics. Some of them are brilliantly produced and shiny, and I'm sure they've been written by committees and signed off by the boards of directors of these fancy companies. And I'm not disputing that these are wonderful works of art, but I'm not sure they actually work to force your suppliers to behave. You have to call them. You have to visit them. You have to ask things of them that require them to step up, that ask them to have, okay, show me your leadership. I need to talk to your privacy pro. And I hope that it's not the security team that you're sending me to. I hope it's a real privacy pro. I hope it's not the COO who pretends to be the privacy pro on the side. Give me someone who really does know what they're talking about. And now I may have some confidence in you that you're serious. But if you don't have that person, I'm moving on to the next vendor. We've done that. We've actually had choices between which technology to use, and you look at how seriously each one takes privacy and you choose the one that does it right. So you can make choices and with your dollars, and it's much more effective than contracts.
And much more than words on a piece of paper or even a policy that may be posted somewhere on a site, right?
Yeah, I think so.
The word feeling, right? So It's having that conversation, and you even use the example of during an interview with a candidate, perhaps you ask questions of, in this case, how do you handle this? Those conversations with your partners probably help as well. Bringing it back internally, and riffing off this feeling a bit more, is it that everyone throughout the organization has to care about privacy at the same level? Is there consistency with the level of care that people have to share? Do they share the same vision for what privacy means? And you mentioned leadership. How do leaders build that if that is the case?
Of course not. I guess to ask your first question, I don't think privacy is incredibly subjective. Each human has a different perspective on what it means to them. Each of us has a different tolerance level for sharing our information with others or preventing people from knowing about us. I mean, if you look at the way people engage with social media, there are huge sharers and there are people who you just can't find online if you Google them for hours, right? They've stayed out of the limelight. That's their point of view. So any organization is going to be filled with humans who have very different perspectives on their own personal privacy. So I don't think it's appropriate to expect everyone to behave that way or have the same point of view. In fact, quite the opposite. I think you do need to have as clear a policies as you can, and to give people real action items on how to behave, something very tactical, very simple. If you can, break it into small pieces, understandable pieces that are how to do this or what to do in this situation, and deliver them in bite-sized pieces with room for question and answer. That's, again, a tactical way of sort of saying, in this instance, when you have this situation, here's what the company wants you to do. And that way, people can implement your culture of privacy in a doing way at their desk. Because ultimately, at the end of the day, yeah, it's work isn't always emotional. It shouldn't be. But yeah, so you have to break it into tactical to-dos, and you have to deliver them in a way that people can relate to and have feedback.
Yeah, and when we look at this, clearly security and privacy go hand in hand, but they are often separate as well. And in the security space, there are some standards to take a policy or a guide and turn those into a set of controls, and then some monitoring to see if the controls are being averted or if there's some anomalies in the processes to protect the system or its information. And I'm wondering, are there similar things for privacy that organizations can leverage to kind of get from the, we believe this, we're going to guide you that way, but we want to actually make it even more actionable?
rather than just wait for your consumers to complain, that's a feedback loop. yes, I think highly mature organizations from a privacy perspective, first of all, they have more than just one person who is on the privacy team. And I'm not saying that the IAPP is like that. We have many people throughout the organization who collectively work on privacy. But if you get to a massive corporation, you'll find they have a gazillion privacy people working for them. And I'm sure they have very sophisticated systems for checks and balances, because the hardest thing, and I think you're getting there, Sean, is to follow up. It's one thing to create a policy or to create a contract or to require your vendor to sign off on something. And it's even one thing to make a decision that we're going to treat our data this way, because maybe we discovered we weren't handling it the best way. We want to do it differently next time. Follow up and making sure that it's actually being implemented that way. I think that's the hardest thing for anyone who's in a decision-making role and a culture-setting role to do. The initial communication about the policy and the decision is sometimes the easiest part, but making sure to calendar the follow-up to make sure it's actually happening the way you discussed, I think that is crucial to success.
Yeah, and another thing, and I'll combine two more points here because I like to do that. But the other thing we see in security, and I'm wondering if there's a parallel here, is security awareness training. Is there something like privacy awareness training?
And, oh, yes.
And who leads that?
Yeah, well, again, you know, the privacy team leads it, sometimes in collaboration with the security team, because you hit the nail on the head. Unauthorized access to data is a privacy issue as well as a security issue. But just in terms of thinking through quantity and quality of data collection and the processing that happens with it. And crucially, one thing that privacy does a lot that security may not have to think about is it communicates with the customer what's happening with their data. And so that's not everybody in the company talks to the customer. Not everyone in the company has to worry about that transparency issue. So yes, sometimes it works great to work with security. Sometimes you're very targeted working with particular product groups and making sure that the way their product is communicated to the data subject is accurate and transparent. And if there's a consent issue, that the consent is collected properly and recorded and that they can take it away if they don't want to give you consent. There's a lot that goes on the privacy side that isn't security, and it's technical enough that that awareness training may not cut it. That's what's so hard about it, to be honest, is that there's a level of awareness training that is just enough to avoid maybe big mistakes, but it's hardly the end of the game. You're going to have to go deep with some product groups, really deep, like a deep tissue massage, and work with them very directly until they truly get it and they know to call you, you know, at the right moment.
And I can't imagine that's a one-off annual event. It's probably a privacy champions throughout as you're building.
Yes, there you go. You know the lingo. That's exactly what you have. Yeah.
There we go. Speaking of subjects, you talked about everybody has their own view of privacy, what they care about internally. Customers do as well. And And maybe there are two axes I want to, or two slices I want to look at this here. First is multinational. So companies are running businesses all over the world that have different cultures in society they have to deal with. And then also maybe even age. Because I know some younger generations look at privacy different than gray hairs like me, for example. So how do organizations deal with some of those nuances that you can't just build one product that does something one way and meets everybody's needs with respect to privacy?
I don't think we have enough time for me to answer that.
Come on.
The simple answer is, my experience and what we've learned from some of the research we've done is that most companies start with the one-size-fits-all policy. They take the strictest law, they look at it from a regulatory compliance perspective, and they say, example, Europe. Oh my goodness, Europe has come up with a comprehensive consumer privacy law that sets a very high bar. If we build our systems to meet that, we'll probably comply everywhere, right? More or less, because it's the strictest law. That's the reactive and appropriate first step. But as you have time to live with that system, and as you have time to understand the consequences of those choices, you may discover that your vendors and others have begun to adapt their technology so that you can modify your practices to meet where your consumers live in the world. So I do think that over time, as companies mature with their privacy programs, they're a little bit able to mix and match and meet the consumer according to the laws where they live. Because sometimes the laws are pretty tough on your data team, and you may not need to go that far. I think people are becoming more fine-tuned over time since post-GDPR. I think practices are more fine-tuned, and that gives the consumer more choice, provided they have clear visibility into what's going on. And
yeah, that's an interesting point. As a consumer, I don't know that I've, being honest here, I don't know that I've ever said, okay, is this company, or maybe I do and I don't realize it, but is this company treating privacy properly? And how do I know? Mm-hmm. I may have a feeling that one big brand cares more than another, and I might choose a big brand based on that feeling, but I don't know that I ever looked at a privacy policy in depth online to say, okay, this one is appropriate or not. So how do organizations, assuming they get the culture internally correct and that somewhat exudes out, how do they ensure that that's represented properly to those who really care?
I'd say getting the language right at the moment of interaction with the consumer is super important. And you're right, maybe most consumers don't notice. You know, they don't notice that the box asking them if they want to hear from you is not pre-ticked. Like, it's open. It says, would you like to hear from us? But you have to say yes. You know, some consumers really will notice that. Everyone in the UK will notice that, by the way, if you do it wrong, I'll just tell you. But you know, and then you maybe communicate to them, hey, we have your data. Would you like to see it? You know, would you like to know what it is? There are ways to invite them to interact with you. These are now becoming values that are more prevalent in US law, California law, for example. It's your data. You've trusted it to us at any time. If you want to know what we have, we can tell you. We can show you. You know, these are all legal obligations. Now, why not be more inviting? Why not be more transparent that these are options for your... And I think as consumers begin to understand their own rights, if you're already set up for it, it's not a shock to you and you can do it smoothly, that will, assuming they're already your consumer, it will go a long way to keeping them as a customer. How you get them there in the first place, I think that's a different question, not for the privacy team. That's for the marketing team.
Mark, that's a good point, actually. Find partners in marketing to help, for sure.
Yeah.
So as we come to the end here, I want to take a peek into the future. Mm. I'll do it in two parts. I'll keep them separate for you. The first is anything on the immediate horizon that organizations should be aware of. Any new regs, any new standards, any new gotchas that are coming that might freak some people out?
Oh, no one should be freaked out at this point because everyone should know they're coming. California was a big wake-up call that U.S. states are one by one going to begin adopting standards that look a lot like what Europe did in 2018. And there have been several proposed federal privacy bills, a lot of which have legs, a lot of which had bipartisan co-sponsorship. And now that we have alignment, party alignment, more or less, across both houses and in the White House, the chances are better than they've ever been that there will be federal privacy legislation. So that shouldn't be a surprise when it happens. Let me just put it that way. That's what people should be getting ready for. And again, if they're built to CCPA standards, if they're built to GDPR, it won't hurt very much. It'll be very familiar and very similar. So I hope it's not a gotcha. That would be tragic.
All right. We'll try to avoid the surprises and the painful bats. So the next piece to really flip things on its head is probably a little more societal and philosophical in nature. Yeah. So, and this comes from a previous conversation I had a couple of days ago. We were looking at data, and who owns it and how involved is a consumer with maintaining control over their data and asking for it to be removed and things like that. And it then quickly, the conversation had quickly shifted to algorithms, artificial intelligence, and where maybe the data is collected per privacy policy and not shared externally per privacy policy, but there's some weird stuff going on with algorithms making decisions on my behalf that I don't know. What are your thoughts on that as a future of privacy?
Yeah, it's the next big challenge. Not just how these machines make decisions for us, but what data trained them in the first place. So I think that takes us outside of a traditional privacy realm, although that's always a cousin, and more into an ethics realm. Overall data protection, data usage, I think it's just the next generation of problems to tackle and problems to solve well. For the most part, I think AI will be welcomed and useful and helpful to consumers. And so it shouldn't be evil and we shouldn't ban it at the door. It does come down to people being trained at institutions of higher ed when they get their certifications all along the way. Just like you add ethics in and professional responsibility into many credentials, we need to begin to think about these things at the point of training the scientists. People want to do the right thing. They just maybe haven't had exposure to how things could go wrong. So we just need to offer them more knowledge, to keep talking about it. I do think that the solution has been to give people control. And while that's a great solution in the law, we all know that that's putting on the customer to stop something that they don't understand. So it has to come from within. The company has to have their ethics and their privacy people and their AI folks working together at the generation, the design of these algorithms, rather than just putting it on the consumer to defend for themselves. That's my prediction.
I love it. So no silos. Let's leave it with the hope that people still want to do the right and good thing. So
I think they do.
I think they do as well. So, Rita, it's been fantastic conversation. Really good to chat with you. And I want to thank everybody for joining us for this session as part of Data Privacy Day with NCSA. And again, Rita, thank you. And thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
RSA Security offers business-driven security solutions that provide organizations with a unified approach to managing digital risk that hinges on integrated visibility, automated insights, and coordinated actions. Learn more at rsa.com. Nintex is the global standard for business process management and automation. The Nintex platform helps their clients accelerate progress on their digital transformation journeys by quickly and easily managing, automating, and optimizing business processes. Learn more at nintex.com. Imperva is the cybersecurity leader whose mission is to protect data and all paths to it with a suite of integrated application and data security solutions. Learn more at imperva.com. We hope you enjoyed this conversation. If you learned something new and this story made you think, then share ITSPmagazine.com with your friends, family, and colleagues. If you represent a company and wish to associate your brand with our conversations, sponsor one or more of our podcast channels. We hope you will come back for more stories and follow us on our journey. You can always find us at the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society.